Blog Talk Radio.
Live and bass from Memphis, Tennessee, this is Grizzly Bear Blues Live, hosted by Joe Mullinax.
Rhyme ruler, the mind of the master, the prime poet designed for disaster, a crime candidate, the light heavyweight, I might levitate right through the heaven's gate, rhymes record break neck spines and vertebrae, step on the plane like Kanye, I heard him say, it's murder one when he murder tracks, I'm a dirtbag, flirting with songbirds and Birkin bags, my first rap catch Roberta Flack, I'm a certified Mac, but I'm sure you ain't heard of that. Slim thugging them hoes, they been loving the flow. They been hunting for men like in Vogue. And I'm in season, the season vet. I don't need respect. All I need is a check. Might check.
It really is amazing when you think about it. We have been going at it here on the Blog Talk Radio Airwaves at GrizzlyBearBlues.com over at SB Nation's Memphis Grizzlies blog that I am fortunate enough to be the site manager of. 41 games the Memphis Grizzlies have played. We are officially, ladies and gentlemen, halfway through the 2016-2017 NBA basketball season for your Memphis Grizzlies. And I got to tell you, it has flown by. It has flown by. It is amazing how quickly time has gone. And here we are. We're past the holidays. We're close to the trade deadline. We're close to the All-Star break, which I know Peter, one of our guests here tonight, and others that cover the NBA are excited about, I'm sure, a nice little breather in the NBA schedule on the horizon. It's really amazing that we are at this point already, 41 games down, 41 to go. Welcome to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax, and this is our mid-season review episode of the podcast. Wherever you may be, however you may be enjoying the program, thank you so much for joining us. Ways to get in touch with the show. You can follow us on Twitter at GBBLive if you do not already do so, at GBBLive. Best and fastest way to interact with the podcast, especially if you are listening to the live recording as we record on a Thursday night here. If you are listening to the archive show, obviously, if you have a question, comment, whatever it might be on the show, shoot us a tweet at GBBLive. You could also follow and tweet me on Twitter, my personal account at Joe Mullinax, M-U-L-L-I-N-A-X. And as I mentioned earlier, I am, and I do mean it, I'm fortunate to work with the great folks and be the site manager for GrizzlyBearBlues.com, the SB Nation NBA fan blog, team blog for the Memphis Grizzlies. Follow that account at SBN Grizzlies. You will get first dibs, first look at all of the great content that goes up every day over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com. Another way you can get in touch with the podcast if you are listening live is the chat room. The chat room is indeed open. If you have a question for myself or one of my guests on the show, we got two, a longer show this week. If you have a question for me or one of them, hop into the chat, or obviously Twitter would work as well, and you can shoot us a line and we'll address that question as it is asked. This is an interactive program. We want you to be a part of GBB Live. Our show tonight, very excited about it. We have two great guests. My first guest, who I'll bring back on the show here in a moment, he's terrific over at Fox 13 in Memphis, a sports anchor for them. He covers Tigers. He covers all the other great sports that happen in Memphis. But, of course, the Grizzlies are a major piece of that puzzle. And he's going to really dig in with me to this midseason review, the best and worst moments of the first 41 games here, whether or not the Grizzlies are better off now than they were a year ago on this date, 365 days ago, January 12th, 2016. The Memphis Grizzlies were 21-19. Of course, they are 24-17 now, so it feels like record-wise, of course, they're better off. David Fizdale gives you a vibe of being better off. The team feels like they could potentially be on the up-and-up, but I'm interested in what Peter has to say on that. We'll talk about the Chandler Parsons drama as well and the hatred that has been spewed about Chandler Parsons on Twitter and on our blog and elsewhere. I'm interested in Peter's take on that, and hatred is strong, but fans can be quite opinionated. Of course, I know that as one of those folks. So I'm interested to hear what Peter has to say about that. And then we'll talk about second half hopes for the Grizzlies with Peter Fleischer. In the second segment, I'm excited. It's his debut on GBB Live. He's been quite active the past month or so. He started his own system, essentially, of blogs, his own 16 Wins a Ring is what it's called. He's the editor-in-chief. He also writes for Welcome to Loud City, Oklahoma City Thunder, SB Nation blog. Adam Joseph has done a tremendous job. Again, one of the hottest names out there in the blogosphere the past month or so. We're excited to have him on the podcast. We'll talk about, of course, the Oklahoma City game from Wednesday night, in which the Memphis Grizzlies, even though they got the lead down to one at one point from pillar to post, the Oklahoma City Thunder, from start to finish, beat up on the Grizzlies and picked up a big win in Oklahoma City. We'll talk about how the Western Conference is laid out. Do we think anybody can stop the Warriors? And then we'll talk about trade deadline deals. Obviously, it was SB Nation NBA Trade Day on Thursday. We had a cool video go up over at grizzlybearblues.com. If you have not checked it out yet, go and do so as you listen to the podcast, kind of outlining where GBB and the mothership, SB Nation NBA, kind of see the Grizzlies going in terms of a trade. We'll talk about that and more with Adam Joseph. So it's a busy program tonight. Those are the best kinds. Two great guests. Very excited to have them both on. And I'll get right to it with my first guest. Again, I mentioned him before. He's been on the program before. He's great. I've been on the Jeff Calkins radio program in Memphis, I believe last year it was. And then I had him on the program last year. He was terrific. Wanted to make sure we had him on again. He's a sports anchor over at Fox 13 Memphis. His name is Peter Fleischer. Peter, Happy New Year to you, sir. I feel like this is the running Seinfeld gag, but is it too late to say Happy New Year now? Is it?
No.
When is it acceptable to not say it?
We can get to October and November. You still want someone to have a Happy New Year. You know, it's never going to expire or get old. Thank you for the introduction, and I'm happy to be back.
Well, we're happy to have you back. Great insights as always, and a good conversation about these Memphis Grizzlies. And as I said, as I was leading you in, Peter, the Memphis Grizzlies, as of today, we record on a Thursday night, January 12th, this latest edition of the podcast, they're 24-17, 365 days ago with Dave Yeager at the helm, with a much older roster, as many fans like to point out, with hated people like Matt Barnes on the team. They were 21-19, and they were starting to get into the point where Marc Gasol eventually gets hurt in the next couple of weeks, the very serious injury. So it's about to get really dark for Grizzlies fans if you go back to last season during this time. Right now it feels much lighter, even in the wake of the tough loss to Oklahoma City on Wednesday night. They beat Utah in a very tough game in Memphis a few nights ago. Then, of course, the miraculous happened, the Memphis miracle, the comeback against Golden State at Golden State that I was very happy that I stayed up for, and I know others were, that were able to power through and watch that game. So the Grizzlies are 24-17. Sure, right now they're the 7th seed in the Western Conference, but they're only a half game back from the 5th seed. They're right in the mix in terms of being competitive. How are you feeling about the Memphis Grizzlies sitting here today, and do you think they're in a better place now than they were even a year ago?
I do. I think that they're in a much better place than they were a year ago on and off the court, and I'm excited about them. I think that when you evaluate the roster up and down, it seems like almost everything is trending in the right direction. You know, it's everything from Chandler Parsons to Mike Conley. David Fizdale is very open about the fact that he's learning from his in-game experiences, and he's connected with the players well to this point. So you got to think that that's heading in the right direction. You remember a year ago, things just felt stale with Dave Yeager, and that manifested itself in him essentially getting himself fired and taking that Kings job. But, you know, yeah, the blowout losses, there were a ton of them last season. Jeff Green was kind of floating in and out of the starting lineup with Zach Randolph. There was a lot of uncertainty there. And so I think that when you look at this, the general direction of where the Grizzlies are heading right now, it's tough, you know, not to be excited and not to have some hope that, hey, there could be even better days, more exciting days ahead after what we've seen in these first 41 games.
And the major reason for that we'll get to a little bit later in the segment. I know it'll upset some of our listeners and followers over at grizzlybearblues.com, but we'll talk about that in a second. And you touched on it there, Peter, and I agree with you. This time last year, this felt like a team on the decline, and you could hear that on the national level. You could hear that on the local level, be it bloggers or media types, folks such as yourself who, you know, make it your business to know these things. It really did kind of feel all around that this was just a team that was on a downward slope. And you talked about Dave Yeager and it feeling kind of stale. I used the word complacency. And in my day job, I am a teacher and a high school football coach. And any coach, anybody who coaches will tell you, complacency is your biggest enemy. Whether it's being complacent in terms of mediocrity, in terms of, oh, we suck, so we're just going to suck, or if it's complacency in terms of, we're good enough. You know, we're good enough. We may never be great, but we're good enough. And I think that's a bad mentality to have, and that kind of feels like that malaise went over the team in that last year with Dave Yeager. I love the David Fizdale addition. That's one of my favorite moments from the season so far, is the various things he's done to kind of kick this team in the rear. It's much needed. The reemergence of Marc Gasol as an all-NBA player has been massive, and I give a lot of the credit for that to David Fizdale on the way that Gasol is being featured. I have a sneaky suspicion that you, along with me and everybody else, would probably point to the Golden State comeback as one of the best moments of the season so far. But try, if you would, Peter, maybe think of another moment from the first 41 games of this regular season that really jumps out to you as one of the best for the Memphis Grizzlies to this point.
Well, I think that, you know, obviously the Golden State, the most recent Golden State game, is exciting, and I think everyone will remember that for a long time. But to me, I think the best moment of the season might have been that first Golden State game when, you know, the Grizzlies are playing shorthanded. Andrew Harrison gets the start at point guard, and the Warriors are, you know, the favorite to win the NBA championship, if not one of the best two teams in the league, and the Grizzlies just smack them around. I mean, they dominated from start to finish. They really just looked impressive, and that was the initial statement. We've seen, you know, since then that they've beat good teams. They've beaten the Warriors again. They've beaten the Rockets. They've beaten the Jazz. They've beaten really pretty much all of the elite teams in the NBA. But that initial Warriors game, I think there were a lot of questions in early December about what is this Grizzlies team? What's the ceiling here? Are we just going to be looking at another second-round exit in a best-case scenario because teams in the league? And I think that that is just so much fun. A weekend and night at the Grindhouse, and, you know, you get the big performances from Marc Gasol, of course, but everyone played well in that game. Jrue Morton played well in that game. Zach Randolph played well in that game. So I think it was really an eye-opener for myself included, but to the people in the locker room, to the people in the national media, everywhere from Memphis and beyond, just that, hey, there's maybe not the same ceiling on this Grizzlies team that there's been in years past. And maybe we need to kind of reevaluate here what we think of this team and kind of how exciting the future can be. Because if they just routed the Warriors starting Andrew Harrison and Troy Williams, you know, there could be some really fun times ahead of us here.
That's a solid pick. I really like that first Golden State game as well. Mine would be the Conor McGregor Marc Gasol flail game in LA when the Clippers, everybody thought they were the best team in the NBA. They were trying to crown them.
Some
of them were on November 16th. How ridiculous that sounds. But that game where they came out on national television against a team that was at the time the best in the NBA and really beat them soundly. Mike Conley had 30 points and 8 assists.
Yeah, he was
great. Marc Gasol, like we mentioned, he was the best point guard on the floor that night against Chris Paul. And then you had Marc Gasol with the major shot to kind of put it away with the Conor McGregor flailing arms walk. That was my favorite moment so far, but the Golden State wins are definitely up there as well. And I agree with you. I think in a way, obviously, I'm not going to say that the second win wasn't the most impressive because of the way that it happened, the comeback. That was pretty darn impressive. But like you said, the Grizzlies were they were shorthanded that game. And it was, you know, it was effort. And it was not laying down, even though they didn't have Conley and others ready to roll. That would made that win so much more impressive as well. So the Grizzlies playing so well against Golden State, period. The first two games that they've played against them this year, I think that's a worthy good moment. Let's try to be negative Nancy's here for a second, Peter. What about a low point for you? What would be the low point at this point in the season, in your opinion? And again, there's highs and lows with every season, so it's not necessarily a knock on the team, but
The Grizzlies fan base, the lowest moment is every single loss, the way that this fan base, you know, and the city kind of hangs on to these reactionary losses. But if I had to pick one, I hated that loss to Sacramento because, you know, Mike was back early and you wanted to beat, you know, your former head coach and all that stuff. But I just remember feeling so awful that Monday night against Charlotte. You know, Mike tries to take the charge, catches the knee in his back. They get blown out by the Hornets. And after that night, it just felt like, wow, you know, like, there goes the season. Can they hang on to a playoff spot? What are they going to look like without Mike? They're going to have to play these two rookie point guards. And it just really looked bleak, I think, to even the most optimistic fan or, you know, analyst or whatever. And so, boy, that was just a tough moment. But they responded to that, and they've got Mike back now, and Chandler's coming on. And so now here we are, you know, a couple of months later, and the ship has been righted, so to speak. But, boy, at that moment, early December again, you're looking at that and you're wondering, you know, what direction is this season going to go? And luckily for the Grizzlies and their fans, it really went up from there, and they've been pretty good ever since.
That is the low point. I would agree with that. That was mine
as
well.
It's
got to
be, right?
It has to be. When you think that your season is essentially over because your point guard, the guy who you just invested 5 years and $150-plus million in, is writhing on the floor in pain, and you find out he broke his back. That's the low point. I'm not quite sure. Maybe you can point to the double losses in Staples Center, the two losses in two nights, as a time where you're, like, kind of bummed out. But at the same time, it has to be the injury to Conley. It has to be. I agree with you on that. We're talking with Peter Fleischer, the sports anchor, a sports anchor over at Fox 13 Memphis. Make sure you're following him on Twitter. If you don't already do so, at Peter_FLEISCHER. A lot of highs and lows have been connected this season to Chandler Parsons, Peter. And this is a gentleman who I wrote about. And I'm going to kind of go off on a tangent here for a second, Peter. I think I have done a pretty good job on Twitter and on the blog. When I'm wrong, I admit it. I admit it. Jeff Green, I was wrong. Trading Zebo, that was a terrible idea. I was wrong at the time. But I kind of nailed the Chandler Parsons thing. So I'm going to pat myself on the back. I wrote about how Parsons and the Grizzlies should come together and form an alliance, and that's exactly what occurred. But the thing is, Peter, we have not seen Chandler Parsons, the guy that I wrote about
right.
over the summer. We haven't seen him yet. Now, we're starting to see flashes of him. He scored 14 points in 18 minutes against the Oklahoma City Thunder. That's pretty darn good. But what he will mean to Memphis, people still have no idea because he has not been healthy. He's starting to get there, but he's not there yet. Some people have already closed the book on his time as a Memphis Grizzly, and literally an eighth of the way through it in terms of regular season play. So I'm curious as to your take on Chandler Parsons. People get frustrated with his social life and his Instagram and all of these things. And I can understand that maybe he could carry himself better, but why can't this fan base embrace a wing? Whether it's Tayshaun Prince when he was brought in, whether it's Rudy Gay, whether it was Jeff Green, you know, and there's reasons for all of those guys, but Chandler Parsons has been injured. Put Tony Allen in the place of Chandler Parsons in terms of recovery from an injury. Put Mike Conley, put one of the core four that is beloved in Memphis in Chandler Parsons' place, and people would give them patience. Not to say that Parsons has earned that patience, but he certainly hasn't earned the disdain that he has gotten from so many people, right? Am I crazy for thinking that?
No, I totally agree. And look, I was very, very skeptical of not only that Chandler would want to come to Memphis, but just that the Grizzlies would want to roll the dice on a guy who played in one playoff game in 2 years because of the knee issues that he's had. I was very concerned about kind of how he would age as those knees continued to kind of take on wear and tear. And I've vocalized those kind of concerns and that skepticism. But when they signed him, hey, you're all in. Grizzlies fans, Memphis, this is what you're dealing with. And so at that point, you kind of have to recalibrate yourself and say, all right, well, we got this guy for 4 years. Let's be realistic here. And that's obviously, look, for any sports fan, of course, that's not so easy to do. Very easier said than done. But the reality of the situation is this guy has really, really been banged up. And you go back, look at some of his Houston Rockets stuff. He was never a high flyer, so to speak. He was never LeBron James or Rudy Gay, if you want to draw, even Jeff Green, draw a Grizzlies comparison. But he was pretty springy back in those early Houston days. And I didn't see that as much in Dallas, and a flat shot already. That kind of got even more flat. So I was worried about what he would be. And now, you know, here we are again, where Grizzlies fans want to get that $96 million. They want the value of what you signed Chandler Parsons for. And I don't think that it was ever going to be that. I think it was always going to be something that kind of evolved through this first year That's exactly what happened in Dallas last year, where he slowly came on. And it happened a little earlier in Dallas than it has this year. But he slowly came on, and kind of by the turn of the new year, February, March, he was playing the best basketball that he'd ever played, or put up the best numbers that he'd ever played. I totally understand the fear that's kind of associated with buyer's remorse and, you know, hey, maybe this guy, he's a little different, because not only is he stylistically different than a lot of Grizzlies that we're used to on the court, he shoots, he's a perimeter-based player, he's not rough and tumble like a lot of these other Grizzlies are, but of course off the court, he's got his differences as well. You're never going to see Marc Gasol on TMZ. That's not going to happen. Mike Conley is a new father, and he enjoys, you know, going home and taking care of his baby. Chandler's out with models and Kate Beckinsale. And so I understand kind of all the elements for why maybe Grizzlies fans might get frustrated with him from on the court and off the court stuff. But look, I was as skeptical about that signing before and after it happened as anyone, I think. Now that you got him, you got to look full scope, look at what you've got across the course of the entire contract and say, hey, let's take this thing bit by bit. Let's try to stay patient. I totally agree. I think that some of the Grizzlies, hey, boy, I'll tell you what, I think that if he was averaging 20 points a game and he was looking healthy, fans would love the fact that he was out with Kate Beckinsale, and they'd love the Instagram pics, and they'd love the "is Chandler Parsons a virgin" joke, all that fun stuff. I think it's totally performance-based, and we'll see. Maybe as he continues to heat up, you know, he'll kind of earn a little bit of love back.
I certainly hope so. He is a talented player. All I can, and I mentioned it in the article that I wrote over the summer, he's toasted the Grizzlies multiple times. He's shown his ability.
Oh, yeah.
I think he hit 10 threes in one game against the Grizzlies.
In one half, yeah.
In one half, there you go. So it really is just remarkable what he can do when he's healthy, and we haven't seen that yet. So please, Memphis, I beg you, be patient. This is the long game with Chandler Parsons. You are playing a long game, like I said. 41 games have been played, and you're only 1/8 of the time through his contract in terms of regular season play, with hopefully several playoff appearances in there as well. Let's give the man a chance to get his legs under him and then judge him when he is healthy. And that might be the major acquisition of this time period. There may not be a major trade for the first time in a while this offseason for the Grizzlies. They might think that the health of Chandler Parsons and Brandon Wright might be enough of an acquisition. Marc Gasol, obviously, Peter, is a major story this year. Again, we talked earlier about getting back to all NBA caliber play. But when it comes to all-star voting, he's lagging behind. I believe they released the updated numbers for that earlier today. He's 10th in the front court voting, so he likely will not be, unless, you know, players and coaches, or the media, excuse me, who make up 50% of the other vote now, unless they all think Marc Gasol is number one and that could somehow get him to the top. It doesn't look like Gasol is going to be a starter, even though he maybe should be, and that's the question I will pose to you. Should Marc Gasol start the all-star game? I'll probably put, will Marc Gasol start the All-Star game to the side, because it's looking less and less likely that he will. Should Marc Gasol be the starting center in the All-Star game this February, in your opinion, Peter?
As a guy who is extremely biased working in the city of Memphis, who has to see Grizzlies fans, and who has to see Mark, really, pretty often, I would say yes. I think, you know, if you just watch a Grizzlies game, you can see how crucial he is to everything that he does, from you know, from the outside shooting, stretching the floor as a five, to handling the ball on the elbow, and the work that he does as a passer. A lot of the time when the Grizzlies need a bucket, the offense gets real simple and familiar. It's give the ball to Mark somewhere near the block in the elbow and let him go to work. And so if he starts the All-Star game, I will be fine with that. I would say yes, Marc Gasol should start the All-Star game. Now, the caveat, as you mentioned, will he? I doubt it. It doesn't look like he's going to get the fan vote kind of where it needs to be. Maybe you can kind of hope for a guy like that to get a late overseas push, but it doesn't seem like it's going to happen. And he's just not, and he will never be, the flashiest player. So guys like Draymond Green, Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins, who may be putting up a little bit better numbers or may attract a little bit more attention on a night-to-night basis, it'll probably fall somewhere in that area. If we're talking about will he actually start the All-Star game. But he gets my vote for the best all-around center in the league. And I don't actually think that Mark is totally anxious to go to the All-Star game. You know, he has a small child too, and he loves his downtime. So that's kind of a funny argument in itself. But I think that he's the best center in the league, and I hope that he gets kind of honored the way that he deserves.
It's good recognition. It's good for the city to kind of get that attention. It's good for the franchise, obviously, because as I've said on this podcast and on the blog before, you know, being in Virginia now, you know, people ask me what NBA team I follow, and I say the Memphis Grizzlies, and they go, who? Like, that's an NBA team? Like, there's people that still are not quite familiar for some reason with the very existence of the franchise. So it's good to get that attention out there. But like you said, obviously Marc Gasol, a human being, has a family, surely could use that time to rest, still coming back from a broken foot. It's amazing. We've talked about that before on the show too, Peter. You know, this time last year, we were all terrified at once he got hurt, maybe a little bit later than this time last year, about him never being the same again. And little did we know, and this was an article on the blog, not only is he not the same, he's better than he was. So it really is amazing how that has all played out. We're wrapping up here with Peter Fleischer, sports anchor over at Fox 13 Memphis TV. Make sure you're following him on Twitter at Peter_FLEISCHER if you do not already do so. Peter, we'll get you out of here on this. We talked about the first half moments that we remember. Obviously, the major storylines, Marc Gasol playing even better than he had before his injury. Chandler Parsons still getting into health. What do you think the second half storylines will be for the Grizzlies? Obviously, the trade deadline is on the horizon. Do you foresee a trade happening? Obviously, Brandon Wright getting healthy, Chandler Parsons getting his legs under him. How does the wing rotation work out? Do you think Memphis makes a move for a more solid backup point guard? What are some storylines that you're watching for the second half of this season for Memphis?
Well, the obvious one is where will Chandler Parsons be in April and May? And how many minutes will he be allowed to play? And what will he look like? I'm optimistic. I'd heard kind of things about Chandler, and I'd had an impression of him before he got here. I think just like, you know, you ask why do Memphians not embrace him fully, but he has been the nicest, hardest working guy. One of the best that I've even had the privilege to cover. So I have all the faith in the world that he's going to work his butt off and try to get right for the playoff run here, but those knees are scary. So what does Chandler look like? Can he get himself in shape, and can he get into that max contract level type of player that Grizzlies fans want to see him in? I also am really, really intrigued about what they're going to do with the point guard position. Andrew Harrison and Wade Baldwin are both, I think, in the bottom 10 in the NBA in true shooting percentage. They're both shooting in the ballpark of 30% from the floor. I mean, these are just atrocious numbers. And Wade Baldwin's your first-round pick. He can't beat Andrew Harrison out for minutes. Andrew Harrison's played 1,000 minutes already this year. Is that your answer? Are you gonna go on a deep playoff run with Andrew Harrison as your backup point guard? We saw what the second round of the playoffs did to Nick Kalathis a couple of years ago, and he had way more pro experience than Andrew Harrison did and will, you know, going into this spring. So I'm very interested to see what they do with that point guard position as 10 days open up, and rosters kind of start to loosen up a little bit as teams fall out of playoff contention. And I think it's going to be really, really indicative of how they feel about Andrew Harrison and Wade Baldwin, not just now, but for the future as well. So I'm very, very interested to see. And I got to admit, I have no clue. I've got my opinions on both of those guys, but the Grizzlies like what they have with both, and we'll see kind of how they play that out.
It's good. And another kind of storyline to the season so far, Peter, is how they have played these young guys. Andrew Harrison is one of the leading rookies in the NBA in minutes. That never would have happened under Dave Yeager. Never.
Never. No.
Never would have happened. So it's important to keep in mind this is his first full NBA season, and he is certainly flawed. He is one of the major reasons that the Grizzlies are actually one of the worst teams in the NBA shooting two-point shots. They have one of the lowest shooting percentages shooting the two-point basket in the entire National Basketball Association, if not the worst. So Harrison's a reason for that. Don't get me wrong. He is very flawed. But do you let him play through those mistakes? Do you let him find his jumper? Do you let him continue to work on it these next 41 games? And as you said, the Nick Kalathis example, does he find himself through that spring getting into the playoffs, Can he be that backup of the future? Is it Wade Baldwin? How it all plays out there, I agree. That's going to be fascinating. Vince Carter and Jermichael Green are the guys because they're the two pieces that it makes the most sense of me to me to trade. Vince Carter is not on a contract for next year. He's 40 years old. Troy Daniels is on the team next year for cheap. Same thing with James Ennis. Doesn't make any sense to trade those guys. You have the bird rights to Tony Allen, and obviously Tony Allen is the grandfather, the legend in Memphis. So on a crowded wing, it feels like Vince Carter is the odd man out. But at the same time, David Fizdale, we talked about how different he is from Dave Yeager on one hand. On the other hand, he's pretty similar to him in that he depends and trusts Vince Carter. I mean, Vince Carter has played consistent minutes all season. He really leans on his experience and the way that Vince plays and carries himself on the court. So whether Vince Carter is on this team a month from now is something that I'm keeping an eye on. And then the Jermichael Green setup, I wrote an article and you shared. I was very appreciative of that. Thank you for the kind words on it. I wrote an article about the Jermichael Green situation for the blog. And it's really kind of fascinating to see how that's going to play out because he's going to get paid by somebody. He's had a good season. He has shown that he can be a good rotation player at the big spot and at the four in the NBA. Is he a starter? I think that may be up for debate on a good team at least. But John Lewis gets paid $10 million a year now. One of the Plumlee brothers in Milwaukee, I think it's Miles or something. I think it's Miles. He makes like $12 million a year. So Jermichael Green is going to get 10 to 12, maybe even more million dollars a year coming up in his next contract. Are the Memphis Grizzlies going to be willing to pay that? And if they're not, are they going to be willing to look for a trade to let him walk and kind of piece together something at the power forward spot for the rest of this season? I'm not sure. I think that's worth watching too. They'll probably need a home run offer to come in terms of a trade. But outside of those two guys and maybe Brandon Wright, who the Grizzlies have done all of this without in terms of their success, I'm curious if the team gets healthy, how those two guys kind of fit into the larger picture. Peter, you will fit into the larger picture of the Grizzly Bear Blues Live podcast and that we will have you on as a guest in the future. Tremendous, tremendous stuff as always. Thank you so much for your time. And we will have you on again on another show down the road.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Joe. Go Grizzlies and we'll talk soon.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. That's Peter Fleischer, ladies and gentlemen, sports anchor over at Fox 13 Memphis. Great guest. Love having him on the show. Follow him on Twitter if you don't already do so, at Peter_Fleischer, FLEISCHER. This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. And before we get to our next guest, I would love to give a shout out to the great sponsor of our podcast, FanEssentials.net. I got to tell you guys, I love this site. If you missed out on their holiday deals and all the things going down with Christmas, this is a great post-Christmas gift. People are starting to get into the NBA. Football season is starting to end. The college football season is over. The NFL is wrapping up the playoffs these next few weeks. The NBA is going to start getting the attention of the entire sports nation. This is your chance to get them their gear, especially the Memphis Grizzlies fan in your life. Go to fanessentials.net, sign up for a great subscription service that'll get sent right to the door of yourself or the fans that you are trying to get outfitted in amazing Grizzlies gear and other materials and goods. FanEssentials.net, make it your place that you get your stuff to rock Grizzlies, Grizzly Bear Blue, excuse me, and make sure you're going to FanEssentials.net, tremendous sponsor of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Our final guest this evening, he's making his debut on the podcast. I'm excited to have him here. He is the editor-in-chief of the brand new website, 16 Wins a Ring. They've done a great job building up a lot of hype around their site, and they've backed it up with great content their first few weeks of existence. He also works for Welcome to Loud City, the SB Nation Oklahoma City Thunder blog, and other sites. We'll talk about OKC and more with this guest. Excited to have him on the program. His name is Adam Joseph. Now, Adam, please correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure you are the furthest away guest we have ever had in the history of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I'm pretty sure I'm right about this. You're in Australia, right?
Yes, I'm down in Melbourne. I think I'm almost certainly the furthest away guest you ever had.
Listen to that accent. I got to tell you, that is fantastic. I am very excited to have you on the program. And this is a great example. And I this doesn't get lost on me, Adam, because this is not my day job and I know a lot of bloggers are like me, so that is not unique. But I just think it's so cool, and this is maybe kind of like an old man dad thing here that I do, but that I'm talking to you about a sport that we both love, the game of basketball, literally on opposite ends of the world. It's amazing how technology works, and it's amazing how sports can bring people together. I just want to say that before we get started.
No, I think you're definitely right about that. The fact that I'm able to cover the game from the other side of the world, and the fact that the NBA community allows that without a second thought is pretty cool, I think. I think in a lot of places and other sports, it doesn't happen from my experience. So it's a pretty cool community we're putting together, even just over Twitter.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. I'm pretty excited about it. I'm excited about your new site, 16 Wins a Ring. I want to give you a chance before we get into our segment here, if you want to, because we have a lot of listeners who maybe aren't as familiar with the outside of Grizzly Bear Blues blogs. Give a quick rundown of what 16 Wins a Ring actually is and why folks should give it a chance to get a look.
Well, we just wanted to create something different. It was an idea between friends that became a reality pretty quickly. And we wanted to deliver, we found that there was websites who were delivering, I suppose what you'd refer to as clickbait. We wanted to do something different, create a really unique site. And that's what we're trying to do at 16windsoring.com. We have a podcast network. That's got, I think we're up to 7 shows at the moment. We've got a team of 40 writers. We're hoping it can become something special. So, it's one day at a time, but we're pretty happy with how things have gone so far.
Yeah, I've enjoyed the content that's been put out. It's obviously nationally driven, so there's a lot of different posts and articles about different teams and different thought processes. You mentioned the podcast network. I've really enjoyed that as well. The Drive and Dish podcast, we've had those guys on our show before. I know they're a part of what you're doing over there as well. So it's a really cool thing. I just wanted to make sure I gave it a shout out before we got into our segment here. 16windsoring.com, make sure you're giving them a look. It's definitely worth part of your NBA fan experience, a worthy part of that at least. And I would appreciate, Adam, as we get into our segment, please be gentle, because the butt kicking that the Oklahoma City Thunder gave the Memphis Grizzlies on Wednesday night is still kind of sensitive for me and other Grizzlies fans. Of course, Memphis got it down to 1 point at one point, and it was close. But the score, to me, from watching the game, the score was not indicative of how much the Thunder dominated. And it wasn't just Russell Westbrook, who posted a triple-double and, you know, had a bad shooting night, but he controlled the game in other aspects. It was Steven Adams outplaying Marc Gasol, which I never would have thought would have happened. That was something that shocked me. It was Enes Kanter and it was Victor Oladipo doing things that I didn't think they could do to the Grizzlies starters and really kind of putting the game out of reach. Russell Westbrook was able to help them get to a point, but he needed help to really put the game away, and he got it against the Grizzlies on Wednesday night. That's big for Oklahoma City moving forward, right?
Well, yeah, it was certainly the polar opposite to what happened in Memphis a couple of weeks ago when you gave us arguably the worst ass kicking that they've had since the Warriors gave them at the start of the Warriors Thunder series. So it was definitely unexpected. I think the biggest thing for me was watching Marc Gasol get worked over by Steven Adams. Now, it wasn't the whole game. They both traded their punches, but the Kanter-Adams combination certainly outplayed the Randolph-Gasol combination. And that was really interesting to me, that the battle between Zebo and Kanter was fascinating. Like, they were just going at it. It was pretty fierce under the basket for a while. It was getting very chippy, as it always tends to do between these two sides who have a lot of mutual respect, but they don't necessarily love each other. It wasn't a greatly officiated game, and I understood that was very frustrating for Grizzlies fans. But like you said, the score may not have reflected the sort of game that it was, but that is also a credit to the Grizzlies, who always managed to take Oklahoma City's punches and then throw a few back of their own. But I'm not too sure whether that ever happens in Memphis. Would you agree with that?
In what regard? I'm sorry. What do you mean? What part?
Well, just the fact that Oklahoma City played so well. I don't know that I see that being replicated on the road.
You don't necessarily. Okay. Yes, I understand. Sorry, I misunderstood. Yes,
no,
I would
fine.
Agree with that. And if Oklahoma City and Memphis played in the playoffs, which is possible, they're, you know, the 4, 5, 6, and 7 seeds right now are all only separated between essentially 2 games, and 3 of those 4 teams are separated by a half game. So anything is possible at this stage with the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th seeds. If they were to play in the playoffs, I think it would be whoever had home court would win. I do think that is possible. Or it would be whichever team you would put the most money on or you would have the greatest faith in finding a way to win on the road. For me, and I'm trying to be unbiased here, for me it's Memphis because of the time that they've played together and in the roles that they've been in. And I think that the Grizzlies would have an advantage in a series, but it would definitely be one of those 6 or 7 game series that would be a grind. It wouldn't be a sweep by any stretch of the imagination. I think OKC would win a majority of their games at home. So I'm in agreement with you on that. I think that a lot of it has to do with Oklahoma City having a good home court advantage. They're clearly more comfortable at home than they are on the road. And Russell Westbrook, now that he is the true alpha male on that team, he is the leader. He has nobody to really answer to. He can do what he wants, as the song famously says in his commercial. and that's a gift and a curse, because sometimes he's going to be in a place where he's able to control his emotions. And other times, like you said, in Memphis, the Memphis Grizzlies fans are going to try to get that out of him every time he comes into FedEx Forum now. It's just going to happen. So between the aggressive play of that game and between the fans and the forum, it's going to be a challenge for Oklahoma City to win there. I agree. I think that's a good point. We're chatting with Adam Joseph, the 16winsofring.com editor-in-chief. He also is a writer for Welcome to Loud City, so certainly adept in talking about the Oklahoma City Thunder. Make sure you're following him on Twitter at Adam Joseph Sport. I'm curious as to your take on this. As we move forward into the second half of the season, most teams have played at least 39 or 40 games. The Grizzlies have played 41 already, so they are truly at their halfway marker. One of the major storylines in our question of the day over at GBB Live's Twitter account, Adam, I tweet out a question every week, have a poll that people vote in, and we had over 130 folks vote this week, or about 130, so thanks to everybody who chimed in with their opinions on this. My question was, who is your MVP for the Grizzlies to this point in the season? And it's a interesting question to me, because obviously Marc Gasol is a guy, it was 150 votes, excuse me. Marc Gasol is a guy who, of course, is probably going to get the most votes in that category, 65%. He was the winner in a landslide. The number 2 MVP midseason for the Memphis Grizzlies, according to the fans that voted, Adam, was David Fizdale, the head basketball coach. And I think that they're right, because Fizdale has done a ton to get these Grizzlies out of their comfort zones, to help players like Marc Gasol get a 3-point shot, to help convince players like Zach Randolph that while he may not like being a sixth man, it's what's best for the team and it's what's best for him in the long run if he wants to extend his career. David Fizdale has shown that he's able to be the player's coach that we all hoped he could be, and that has really helped these Grizzlies change for the better. I think that's massive, but again, within my Memphis Grizzlies blogger bubble, maybe I can't see the bigger picture on him. So how do you see David Fizdale? How much do you think he has to do with Memphis's success? Is he really the second biggest reason that the Grizzlies are better off today than they were this time last year?
Yes. Well, I actually really do think that. I think one of the most impressive things about the Grizzlies this season is that the thing with when Fizdale came in, we assumed that his identity of the team would change vastly. And what he's done is he's built on the already established identity that you guys have gotten, that grit and grind, and he hasn't done away with it. He's kept it and added 3-point shooting to make him more of an inside-out team. And he's finding at the moment, as the season goes on, I think he's finding a better blend of inside and out. You've got more outside shooting now, which allows you to ground and pound inside with Zebo, Marc Gasol, who, I mean, his 3-point shooting as well has been phenomenal. And he's certainly, let's be clear, he is the MVP of the team, but Fizdale's ability to get through to the players has been a huge factor. I've been really impressed. He obviously came highly touted coming out of Miami, being the associate head coach with Eric Spoelstra during the title runs. And the reason that you knew Fizdale was going to be a good appointment from the get-go is Fizdale didn't take the first job that was offered to him. He waited to take the right appointment, and he's certainly shown that the Memphis appointment was the right one so far.
I think that him being in Memphis has really been a kick in the butt that this team needed. I talked about complacency earlier in the show with our first guest. They were complacent. You could see in the way that they played, they were fine with the way things were. They were satisfied, and that is, especially with a team that is so veteran-driven, with a team that has a core four guys the fans love so much that it's going to be very hard to move in any sort of a trade. You have to find a way to get development out of those guys, even though they are veteran players. And that has been his biggest strength. Marc Gasol being a legitimate three-point threat is massive for the offense of this team. And it's not come to fruition yet because you haven't had a healthy Chandler Parsons to really drive that point home. And guys have really missed some easy shots as they did against Oklahoma City. And in fairness, OKC defended pretty well as well at times. But you look at what they have done in terms of really adjusting the way that they played. And it's inspiring to see from a group of guys, again, it's kind of the you can teach an old dog new tricks kind of mindset. It is possible for a veteran group who has been together for so long to make positive change. And I think that just adds another layer to their story in Memphis. Do you think David Fizdale, Adam, has what it takes come playoff time? Obviously, he's never coached in a playoff series, and this is pure speculation on our hands here. But from what you've seen in a couple of games against him, whether it's scheme, would you be nervous about going into a series with Memphis from a coaching standpoint? Billy Donovan versus David Fizdale, does that give you pause as an OKC guy?
Yeah, definitely. Mainly because the Grizzlies have shown this season how good they can be in the clutch. If we're having a look at it now, you guys are 16-9 in clutch games. You've got the eighth best offense, and that's a vast improvement on your regular season offense. You've got the third best defense, best net rating. So I'd definitely be worried about playing you guys in the playoffs because it's a lot of clutch time play. The games are bound to be close, much closer than regular season. And then the Grizzlies also have more time to scout Oklahoma City. So it just adds to that intensity. So I don't see any reason why he can't be a good playoff coach. Eric Spoelstra was a very good playoff coach. He was thrown straight into the deep end. So I don't see why Fizdale can't have that same impact for Memphis, particularly with the experience that you guys have got with Zeebo, Marc Gasol, Mike Conley, even Chandler Parsons has relative experience. So I don't see why not. Like with that combination of experience on and off the court, I don't see any issue there.
I tend to agree. I think that he's only going to thrive in the playoffs. There might be a little bit of an adjustment time. I'm not going to say he's going to be perfect because Dave Yeager wasn't perfect. And Dave Yeager is a good basketball coach. It just didn't work out in Memphis. It's going to be fascinating to see how he plays the next half of the season. The first half was fascinating because of all the injuries that the Grizzlies dealt with early. Now they're starting to get healthy. Chandler Parsons looked the best that he has as a Memphis Grizzly in his 18 minutes of play against Oklahoma City. He scored 14 points in those 18 minutes. And while he didn't necessarily contribute in other categories, no assists, no rebounds, he was moving better. And that is a big thing for the Grizzlies. So between him getting healthy and his legs under him, between Brandon Wright being on the verge of a return in the next couple of weeks, that is going to be how Fizdale handles a healthy roster. Because now you've got all of a sudden you've got James Ennis, you've got Troy Daniels, and you've got Vince Carter all on the bench. Who's going to get the minutes behind Tony Allen and Chandler Parsons? That's an interesting question. How do you treat Andrew Harrison? Do you play Tony Allen more at the backup point guard? That sounds crazy to say, but they've done it so far this season. Brandon Wright, does he take minutes away from Jermichael Green? Does he take minutes away from Zach Randolph? How he's going to mess with these rotations, or if that's not going to be a concern for him because they're going to make a trade, that this next month is really going to be fascinating for me to watch, Adam. I'm looking forward to it. Another thing that's going to be fascinating to watch play out is the Western Conference. Not necessarily for the top. It's a lot like Groundhog Day in that way to last year. Golden State is more than likely going to be the one seed. San Antonio Spurs, who people continue to not necessarily overlook. I don't think overlook is fair at this point. They just expect whether Tim Duncan's there or not for the Spurs to be the two seed in the West at this point, an elite contending team. The Houston Rockets are probably the biggest surprise in the NBA so far. 31-10. They're one of the best teams in the NBA record-wise. They're the three seed pretty solidly at this stage. But from there, from the four seed to the seven seed in the Western Conference, as of this recording, and there's games going on as we speak that could affect this, you've got the LA Clippers, who are the four seed. You've got the Utah Jazz, who are the five seed. The Oklahoma City Thunder are the sixth seed, but they're tied with the Jazz for that five seed at this moment. And then a half game behind those two teams is the Memphis Grizzlies as the seven seed. And then it's almost guaranteed at this stage, which is always nice. In the past, and I know OKC has been the same way in the past at times due to injuries, And at times you worry if they're going to make the playoffs at all. This year, I don't think that's going to be a problem. The Portland Trail Blazers are the current 8th seed in the Western Conference, and the Grizzlies are 6 games ahead of them. So unless the Grizzlies fall off a cliff, or, you know, the Jazz or the Thunder fall off a cliff, I think we have 7 of the 8 playoff teams in the West. It's just going to come down to what their seeding is. How do you kind of see the West shaking out? Again, we're halfway through the season. There's a lot that can happen in the next 41 games or so. Who do you think can make a run in the Western Conference outside of our own 2 teams? Because obviously you think OKC, maybe if they make a trade, if these guys continue to develop, maybe they can surprise some people. I certainly think that the Grizzlies, if they get healthy, anybody outside of Golden State, they can maybe give a shock to. So who do you think can make a run? And then who do you think is kind of a pretender out West as well? And also, can anybody stop the Warriors? Are the Warriors and the Cavs just going to run it back again in June? Or is there actually somebody who can upset Golden State?
Well, starting with, I suppose we'd say pretenders. OKC have 8 of the next 9 games on the road. So they're going to LA, they're going to Golden State, Utah, Cleveland, and San Antonio in the next couple of weeks. So it's going to be tough for them to maintain the pace that they're on, which is about 51 wins. So I would expect a little bit of slippage. I think they'll slip down to the 7th spot. And then I think based on health for both Memphis and Utah, they're going to be battling for the 5 and 6 spots. And then I think we sort of don't know who the Clippers are right now, do we? Because they've been so Jekyll and Hyde this season. They were the best team in the league in the opening 10 games, and they were one of the worst teams in the league for a 10-game stretch where they went, I think it was 2 and 8. And then they've won, I think, 5 and 4 in a row now. So we don't really know who they are. Houston are great, but in a slowed-down playoff environment, do we think that shakes out the same? And does their defense hold up for an entire 7-game series? Not so sure. And then obviously we have the Spurs, who are going to be the bona fide second seed. But for me, I don't see anyone stopping the Warriors. I think the Warriors have too much at both ends. They're cruising right now, and they're 33-6. Like, the only team that I've seen play well against them this season, really well, have been Cleveland, San Antonio, and Memphis. But I don't know. Oh, and Houston, but I don't know that lasts for 7 games. I just don't see how you can stop all their stars and win 4 games in a series. It's just too hard to see for me personally.
They are pretty powerful, Golden State, and I do think that the money is on them making another appearance in the NBA Finals against the Cleveland Cavaliers, and you run it back, which, you know, at large NBA fans, of course, will be very excited about, and the league will be excited about it. You know, there's plenty of star power in a Warriors-Cleveland Cavaliers series. But I tend to agree with you with the seeding in terms of maybe you say the Clippers hang around that 4 seed. I could see Oklahoma City slipping to the 7, and I could also see them, especially Russ, giving San Antonio a hell of a time. Obviously, they'll probably put Kawhi on Westbrook. But after that, again, if you can get the development of these young players, you get Steven Adams on LaMarcus Aldridge to play defense against him. I think OKC could give the Spurs a series at that 2 seed. If I'm the Grizzlies, I kind of want the 6 seed, Adam. I kind of want the 6 seed because I'm with you. I'm not buying Houston for the exact reason. Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon have played extremely well. I don't see them holding that for a whole season. And if we're talking about health, people like to question the health of the Memphis Grizzlies. I mean, goodness gracious, look at Houston. If you're basing it off of Eric Gordon, he's hanging by a thread every time he plays the game in terms of his health. Now, you don't want guys to get hurt. Houston has been, you know, kind of playing above their heads a little bit. So if I'm the Grizzlies, if I'm the Thunder, if I'm the Jazz, you know, obviously the Clippers, when they get healthy, could be a force. But I'm looking at that Houston 3-6 matchup, and the nice thing about that is if you make the second round, you don't have to play Golden State. Maybe you have to see the Spurs, but I think you'd rather see the Spurs than the Warriors, and then obviously you'd see the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. But once you get to the Western Conference Finals, you're going to have to get through them anyway. You roll a ball out on the court, and you see what happens. I'm fascinated by the seeding, how it's all going to play out. I think the top 2 seeds are kind of locked in. You can argue that Houston, unless they get hurt, and again, I don't want them to. I'm just saying, you know, people give Memphis a hard time for their health. You know, let's be a little bit fair and look at other teams that have had histories of injuries with guys on their roster. The 3 seed through the 7 seed, how that plays out in the West, bears watching. If Houston stays at that 3, I think I want Memphis to get the 6. We're wrapping up here with Adam Joseph, the editor-in-chief of 16windsofring.com, as well as a contributor and writer over at Welcome to Loud City. Follow him at Adam Joseph Sport. Trade deadline. Obviously, SB Nation did their trade day theme today. The Grizzlies were a part of that. Forgive me, I didn't go to Welcome to Loud City today. I'm pretty sure Welcome to Loud City did a video on the trade deadline. If they didn't, there's plenty of other sites that did, so I'd recommend checking out those videos, not just the one at grizzlybearblues.com, but at other SB Nation NBA sites. Let's get some bold predictions here, Adam. Who is the biggest name that's going to be moved on trade deadline day or in the buildup to the trade deadline? Who's the biggest name traded before the deadline hits?
A week ago, I would have said Jimmy Butler and Paul Millsap. Like, we were hearing a lot from a lot of people. Keith Smith from 16 Windsor Ring was all over that. But all of a sudden, it's gone very quiet. The Bulls have seemingly withdrawn Jimmy Butler from any talks. The Hawks have done the same for whatever reason. So I think we're looking more towards the likes of Brook Lopez, Nerlens Noel, or Julius Okafor probably be the headline trades of the deadline. I think that with the new CBA, teams have realized that to improve, trading is going to be the way forward, and that's how you'll get superstars, particularly with how extensions will now work. We've heard about the Boogie Cousins $207 million extension that he'll sign in the summer. I think that there'll still be superstar movement, but the contracts will protect the home team, so to speak, from being robbed blind and losing their player in free agency.
And that is nice. I know you follow a small market team too. A small market fan, that is very nice that they'll at least be able to kind of get something back. I like that wrinkle in the CBA. At least I do. I think the biggest name move is going to be Rudy Gay. And I think potentially Rudy Gay might become a member of the Oklahoma City Thunder. I know that's been rumored before. That's not a new development, but I could see that happening. And in theory, that would be a nice piece for OKC. I do have to warn you that every team he's been on, I haven't done enough research with Sacramento, but whether it be the Raptors or whether it be obviously with Memphis, it hasn't worked out. The team's gotten worse since Rudy Gay arrived after trades. But I think it's going to be Rudy Gay. I think Rudy Gay is going to be traded. OKC is a possible destination. I could see him going other places as well, but I think it's going to be Rudy Gay. Do you think Oklahoma City is going to make a trade?
Well, originally, at the start of the season, we were hearing a lot. There was very close to being a Rudy Gay, Cameron Payne framework of a trade before the season started, but then Campaign broke his foot. A lot of things have changed since he's been recovering. The bench has shaken out a bit differently for the Thunder. They no longer need Rudy Gay perhaps as much as they thought. They've always been very interested. There was talk that Enes Kanter would be gone by the deadline. With how well he's played this season, I find it hard to believe that he's traded in this current season. He might go in the summer, but I actually think it'll be very quiet for Oklahoma City. Sam Presti's always been an opportunistic operator, and barring a deal that he definitely wins, I'd be surprised. I think that the Thunder, contrary to popular opinion prior to this, I actually think they'll be pretty quiet.
I kind of feel that way about Memphis too. I mentioned that in our video that we did with SB Nation. I think that they could look into trades for Brandon Wright if he gets back early enough and plays, but I also believe in what he could bring to a healthy Grizzlies team. He is an excellent pick and roll player, and the Grizzlies don't really have that right now. And with all the shooters, I mean, imagine a Brandon Wright, Mike Conley, Chandler Parsons, James Ennis, Vince Carter lineup. I mean, you got Brandon Wright running pick and roll left and right with Chandler Parsons and Mike Conley and Vince Carter, and all he can do is finish at the rim when he's healthy. Who's going to stop him? Not many guys are going to be capable of doing so. Every year that he was healthy, he would post ridiculous, like 65% shooting percentages and things like that. He's an excellent finisher at and around the rim. So hopefully he can come back and be healthy. But if you move him, maybe you move Vince Carter. That's possible because of the wing log jam. Or maybe you just say, sorry, Troy Daniels, you don't defend well enough. Maybe you say, sorry, Vince, we're going to kind of use you more as a player coach at this point because we want to get Troy some more run, because he's going to be under contract next year. Maybe that's how you pursue it. That is going to be fascinating to watch. The Grizzlies have made a trade each of the last few seasons. This year is kind of in doubt. I think they might think that the acquisition of health with Chandler Parsons and Brandon Wright may be enough. Thank you so much, Adam. I know your time is precious for one of the busiest men in basketball blogging. Thank you for your time again, and congratulations on 16 wins a ring. It's a great site. I see only good things coming for it. Of course, we'll have you on the show again in the future. And anytime you need anything from us at GBB, we're happy to help you out.
No, likewise, anytime.
All right. Thank you, Adam. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that was Adam Joseph, the editor-in-chief of the great new basketball website, NBA site, 16 Wins a Ring. Make sure you're checking him out on Twitter at Adam Joseph Sport. We're finishing up here on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. Our next show is actually going to be a little bit earlier than normal. We're going to record on a Tuesday next week. The reason for that is I am going to the Memphis Grizzlies Washington Wizards game in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday night. I will not be able to record on Thursday night. I'll be doing full recaps and kind of catching up. Going into the city on a weeknight is kind of intense in the Northern Virginia, Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. So no show on Thursday. I'm going to record the night before I go to watch the Grizzlies play the Wiz Kids in D.C. So a short week. We'll have a shorter show. We'll have one guest, and we'll talk about the two games that happened, of course, including the Martin Luther King Day game coming up on Sunday night against Chicago. We'll kind of look ahead further to the schedule coming up for the Grizzlies and maybe a little bit more on Chandler Parsons, maybe these next two games, the Friday night at Houston and the Sunday Chicago game, the Martin Luther King Day game that's being played on Sunday night for Memphis. I'm interested to see how he continues to get his legs under him. The Brandon Wright updates will be interesting to watch play out. And I'm telling you, the stuff on the wing, keep an eye on that. That is my major preview for the next two games. How the minutes, now the Chandler Parsons, maybe we'll start to see expansion of minutes, expansion of role. Will Vince Carter continue to get the brunt? Will Troy Daniels continue to kind of get on the short end of the stick? Will he continue to get more minutes, perhaps, as Vince Carter gets phased out? That is going to bear watching. You can kind of get a feel for where Fizdale and the coaching staff, maybe even the front office, is going towards this trade deadline with how the wing minutes are divided. So I'm going to be on wing minute watch over these next couple of games and then even beyond as we get closer to the trade deadline. Again, our next podcast will record on Tuesday, January 17th at 8 p.m. Thank you so much to FanEssentials.net, our tremendous sponsor. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at GBB Live and subscribing to the podcast on iTunes if you do not already do so. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to our great guests, Adam Joseph and Peter Fleischer. It's been a great show. I appreciate every single one of you. I appreciate these Memphis Grizzlies. They're a fun team to follow. And I ask that you continue to grind forth, Grizz Nation. I am your host, Joe Mullinax, and this is Grizzly Bear Blues Live.